It's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's just turned 4 minutes past nine on this Friday. It's the 11th of October 2024. And the next hour, we're going to be joined by our Friday panel. We want your views and your opinions throughout the course of that hour. You can get in touch with us right now, 0866 20 5000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. Or give us a call on 074 91 25 5000, or you can email comments at highlandradio.com. And a quick reminder, if you want to watch the show at home, if you are at home, of course, we're on your smart TV or your Fire Stick on the YouTube app, across your mobile devices on that platform as well as Facebook and around the world on X. All right, so let's say good morning to those joining us today. We'll say good morning first to Peter Casey, Chairman of Claddagh Resources. Peter, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for joining us. Great to have you on the programme. I suppose the election is upcoming. Have you made a public statement on that yet? Are you going again, or what's the story? You've had two decent runs at Europe.
Oh, I'm not going in the general election.
You've jacked it in. Jacked that side of things in from a general election perspective anyway.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. That's all right. Councillor Jimmy Brogan, independent councillor in the Donegal Municipal District. Jimmy, good morning to you.
Morning, Greg. How's it going?
Good. Great to see you. Thanks for your time. And Paddy Rooney, PRO of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. Hi, Paddy.
Yes, good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good, thanks. Lots to get through, including uncertainty over the future of cancer flights from Donegal to Dublin. This due, we're told, to the Dublin Airport passenger cap. Emerald Airlines says it will have to consider the loss-making route's future for commercial reasons. Now, I suppose there's two questions here. Should PSO routes be exempt from the passenger cap or not be allowed to be included in any revisions? Or B, perhaps, is the airline using what is a very emotive route as a bargaining chip in the wider conversation? Paddy, I'll start with you. What do you think?
Well, I would be very disappointed if anything ever happened that flight. You see, it could in principle be in danger because it's not actually a public service as such. That service is in place now for well over 20 years. And the Friends of the Hospital, the people involved at the time, were actually advocates for that service. And it came about in the time when the old Northwestern Health Board was there. So public representatives from Donegal, along with the Friends of the Hospital, were advocating with the Health Board at the time. But it's actually a local charity. It was at the time, anyway, because I was involved in it.
And still is, still is.
And the local charity doing it. And they actually booked the flights and then they invoiced the HSE. So it's not actually tied down like a rock-solid public service as such. But I know in relation to the caps and the cap at the number of people going through Dublin Airport, Michael O'Leary of Ryanair has been agitating recently about the fact that Ryanair intended to put on an additional 270,000 seats, now not flights, over the Christmas period. And they were working on the principle that high volume numbers and low profit meant that they were able to get a good margin out of it. And of course, he was making the case that if there is a cap, they won't be able to do that and it'll drive the price up. So I would hate to think that that flight from Carrickfinn would get washed away in that. Because the unique thing about this, Chris, is that Donegal is the only county in Ireland that actually has that air transport from Carrickfinn to Dublin for people who require primarily cancer treatment services in Dublin. And it's also the only county in the country as well that has a bus service. Of course, that's funded by a charity as well, the Friends of the Hospital. So, of course, that's a separate thing. So while I believe that it's safe, it's not safe, of course, until it is safe.
Yeah, okay. And I suppose the one thing that could be done here is a bit of clarity for those that are using it. 430 cancer patients use it. Others use it as a pass-through, obviously, from into Dublin and outside of the country then for treatment. And there are also seats taken up by family members or carers as well. So it's really quite significant. And it is there because we are so far removed from services that are on the people of Dublin's doorstep, for an example. Peter, I mean, I suppose we can talk about the cancer flight specifically and the fact that this seems to be the only low-hanging fruit that's been dangled out there by an airline as a potential loss. I just wonder, are they aware of the importance of this from a health perspective and are using that in some way? I'm not saying there's anything malicious going on. And I suppose maybe we can talk more broadly about the passenger cap and how it might be impacting
best of luck to
the country's development.
Best of luck to
Peter, what's your view?
Yeah. I think the cap itself needs to be looked at. You know, the cap was introduced back in 2007 by Fingal County Council, apparently, and it doesn't include in-transit passengers, you know, which there's 2 million a year. And Fingal County Council were actually the county council that approved the planning for the extra runway that was finished in 2022 at like a 380 million cost, you know. And I mean, I think there needs to be a temporary suspension of the cap until we, you know, have better intelligence on what we're doing about it, you know. Because, and the other point, you know, when we're going to talk about how to save money in government later on, I know, you know, I've often said in the past that, you know, we've got two ships in the Navy that are essentially just not commissionable. One of them isn't, the other doesn't work very well, and they should be converted into air sea rescue helicopters to save sailors and to transport urgent critical care passengers to Dublin when needed. You know, so there's a couple of issues here involved in the whole cap thing, but it is you know, Dublin Airport's just a vital part of the infrastructure, and you know, we just can't have put caps on without sorting the problem out. You know, we have another runway there. We need to, the government needs to step in and put a temporary suspension on the cap.
Yeah, I note that Sinn Féin are amongst parties that have picked this story up, saying that some certainty assurance needs to be given to cancer patients here in Donegal. Jimmy Brogan, the sooner that's taken off the table, I think the better for everyone involved.
Yeah, well, I think the government do need to give some certainty to it. Like, you know, I know, like, I think the Donegal people are sort of being used as a pawn in this whole thing. You know, the cap is the big issue. Like, you know, when they're trying to, you know, create issues like this flight, the cancer flight, like, you know, to bring, you know, to bring it to a head and try to force the government into up on the cap. Like, you know, you got to remember too, in Donegal, like, we've no rail link. You know, we've no motorway network, bus services that don't really run. You know, like that, you know. Flights from Donegal, you know, are up to Dublin are essential, you know, for a lot of people in West Donegal, like, you know, because it's the quickest and easiest way to get there, like, you know. So, and like, you got to remember too, that, you know, a lot of the services have been stripped away from the Donegal hospitals over the years, like, you know. So, listen, the government were, that's all issues that the government have created over the last, you know, 100 years, you know. So it's up to the government now to make sure that the people in Donegal that need this flight, you know, that it's available to them, like, you know, and whatever they have to do, they have to do, like, you know. But I think, as I said before, that we're being used as a pawn in this, like, you know. This is all about the passenger caps in Dublin, and you know, the people in Donegal are just being, or this is just one of the issues that they're trying to use to highlight the cap and put up the cap. And remember, this cap, you know, there's, I don't know, many million people come into Dublin, but a lot of them are in and out for, you know. You think of it, you know, the environmental issues, like, you know, here in Donegal, we're told we're not allowed to burn turf, and there's going to be people coming in now to inspect our sheds. And at the same time, they want to put another 10 million passengers up in and out through Dublin, like, you know. And a lot of them might need to travel, you know, a lot of them don't, like, you know. So I just think we should look at the regions we're traveling.
We do need tourism, you know. So
of course we need tourism, but, you know.
It's the lifeblood of the country. You know,
so is heat, you know. So we just,
but our American multinationals won't come in if they can't get in out of the airport, you know.
Well, I suppose
they pay 95% of the corporate tax revenues, you know.
I was just going to say, Greg, that this is a problem of short term thinking, I suppose, or another example of short term thinking in this country, because either Dublin County Council or Fingal County Council, the planning authorities in those two areas, have consistently approved private domestic dwelling around Dublin Airport, and particularly in the flight path. I mean, there was no forward thinking here at all to think that the population of the country is going to increase. I mean, the ESRI has been saying this for many, many years, that the population of the country is going to go from 5 million currently up to 10 million in whatever time frame. How do they think, do they ever think that this is going to have any impact at all on the volume of people coming in and out of the country and moving internally in the country? And at the same time, short-term planning have been given planning approval for houses. I mean, the reason why the cap is there is because of the, and we're talking about thousands of people now, not 20 or 30, but thousands of people who are living within the flight path, and the This is a sort of a physical and a psychological torment to the people that are living in the houses here. This is a problem now that we have created ourselves here. But we're right. I mean, if the population is going to increase, the activity, the economic activity within the country is going to increase, and the airport is going to have to increase in size. There's just no two ways about it. And there's a bigger clash coming down the line here between the people who live in that area and between the Dublin Aviation Authority or whatever, if that's what you call them, because there is two sort of, we have a situation here where the immovable object is going to meet a solid rock here. And one or the other, I mean, the capacity of Dublin Airport just can't be restricted going into the future, and that's just the way of it.
Yeah, but it's a kind of a strange situation too, is that we have Eamon Ryan as the Minister for Transport and also the Minister for Climate. You know, maybe it's the ideal thing to have, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, obviously he's got to focus on the climate, but the transport side of things, we built a second runway, presumably, as you've said, Paddy, you know, with a view to having more flights. And yet we seem to have cocked it up to the point whereby here we are literally saying we are going to reduce how many people can come into our country and leave our country with potentially bags full of cash in their pockets. It's crazy, Peter, it seems.
Yeah, now 380 million for that extra runway, you know. And you know, let's face it, you know, Ireland's future is looking after the American multinationals who pay all the tax bills and tourism. You know, our farmers are screwed, you know, so that they're, you know, our industries are going forward. The fishermen are on a roadway to nowhere. So our future is the American multinationals who pay all the bills and the tourism. And we need a world-class international runway airport at Dublin. And it doesn't work to say, well, they can go to Shannon or they can go to Cork instead. You know, that's not the way it works. So if you're flying in from America, the very last thing you want to do after an eight-hour flight is to then get on a three-hour, you know, journey to Dublin. You know, so
yeah, but lastly, on this issue, unless anyone wants to jump in, of course, though, your point's not missed there either, Jimmy, in that, you know, we are talking and arguing effectively for an increase in flights for all the benefits that brings. And I suppose on the wider scale of things, aviation transport's not a massive polluter. I think it's somewhere between 3 and 5% of all nasty emissions. But we are here arguing for more planes. And at the same time, Jimmy, you've pointed out there are people listening to this show that are being told that their private property could be raided to ensure that they're not illegally burning wood that's too wet or turf. It is a strange old situation we find ourselves in.
I think somebody told me one time that something like 15% of the world's population actually have ever been on a plane, like, you know. So we're flying for the rich people, really. Like, you know, there's majority of people in the world will never ever be on a plane. Like, you know, so you know, we just gotta, you know, I know it's important for tourism to get tourism and tourists into Ireland, like, you know, because it is here in the northwest, especially. I guess it's the biggest thing that we have, the biggest biggest income generator that we have. But you know, we just need to, you know, have a look at things and see how many flights we actually need. Because as you know, during COVID, a lot of the business flights just didn't happen because and businesses still run. Like, you know, I know tourists need to
actually, the economy tanked.
Tourists need to come to the country. You know,
the economy tanked.
But remember, Greg, it's not all about pollution here now. Remember, in order for the airport authority to get permission for that second runway, and the size of it and the length of it. I mean, there was a huge amount of objections from people locally about noise pollution, not about air pollution, noise pollution. And planning was granted for that. On the proviso was that there was going to be no flights between 11 and 7 or whatever it is. And that's the problem too. So it's not all about air pollution.
No, and you're quite right. That's the principal reason. And I appreciate the clarification there. That's the voice of Paddy Rooney. We also have Councillor Jimmy Brogan and Peter Casey. More from them after this short break. Now, just some emerging news as such. Just reading today, the Taoiseach joined with France and Italy in their strong criticism of Israel after United Nations peacekeepers were wounded in Lebanon. Simon Harris warned that firing on peacekeepers can never be tolerated or acceptable and found it deeply concerning. Now, there are Irish troops over there, and thankfully they weren't injured in this. But there is a rotation of Irish troops, and I've been informed that the understanding is that the next battalion to go out is out of Finnair camp. So whilst we all have an interest at the moment in Irish troops in southern Lebanon and everything that's going on over there, I think in this part of the world, if that turns out to be the case, will be of a much... it'll bring it home much more to us. Peter, I'll start with you in relation to that. I mean, obviously, it is a worry when we see peacekeepers being fired upon by Israel in southern Lebanon. But an extra worry for us in the northwest, as we understand, the next rotation to go out is the battalion out of Finnair camp.
Right. You know, the solution to the Israeli problem is just, you know, I've spent time over in Israel, and you know the Palestinians in Gaza have been radicalized over the last 18 years, obviously by being barricaded in, and you know life has been just hell for them. But you know Israel, I suppose, had to absolutely respond at the time of the attack on October the 7th. I think their attack was massively disproportionate, but I don't think Irish peacekeepers should be over there at all. You know, because you know, this is an all-out war.
Would you have pulled them out then at this point?
Oh, I wouldn't have put them in the first place, you know.
Well, they've been in there for decades. Like,
I know, I would pull them out, yeah. I don't think that we need... I mean, are they going to be armed properly and engaging in conflict? No. And so I don't see the reason why they're there. This is an all-out...
My concern as well is that Israel... I was listening to a senior Israeli... officer in the army who, you know, quite pointedly, and I don't think it was actually picked on up as much as it could be. I don't know if any of you other heard it, but they effectively said that they implied that the peacekeepers stood idly by while Hezbollah developed its infrastructure right under their noses. And, it's, you know, that's quite a charge to make, which I'm not saying is true, but it's quite a charge to make.
I don't know if they'd be standing idly by, but I do know, having spent time in Israel, you know, the Palestinians in the West Bank did get on well with the Palestinians. There were majority of them work in Jerusalem and Bethlehem, and there was, you know, they went back and forth, and they had a reasonably good quality of life in the West Bank. And, you know, it's worth pointing out that Sinwar, who runs Gaza, does not get on with Abbas, who runs, Gaza. And they're 73 miles apart. So the idea of, you know, having a two-state solution, the solution, I think, is to have Gaza as a completely separate independent country, you know, run by Gaza under UN sort of auspices, and the West Bank, similarly, separate country. But the two of them, they don't get on with each other. So, like, to say that we'll have a two-state solution, it seems
almost naive. Yeah, I get you. Paddy Rooney, just on the wider points raised there.
Well, I mean, to all intents and purposes, what's going on in South Lebanon at the moment can be classified as a war zone. Yeah. What a peacekeeping force is doing in the middle of a war zone is beyond me. I disagree with Peter in the fact that they shouldn't have been there in the first place. They should have been, because they were providing... I mean, they were brought in there because, as a result of the tail off of the brutal civil war in Lebanon, the good part of what was it, 25 years ago or whatever. I mean, we have a situation now, and it's going to be, it seems that we don't ever learn anything from history. We had a situation where Dutch troops were in Bosnia back in the early 90s as part of a UNIFIL peacekeeping force. And the Bosnians or the Serbian army just walked past them, and they killed 8,500 men in Srebrenica. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. And whatever kind of remit or orders that the Dutch soldiers had, they couldn't do anything about it. So what was the point of them being there? And yeah, a lot of the officer corps in particular had a lot of psychological issues as a result of that, and associated with guilt that they allowed all these people to be killed in a football stadium. Those Irish troops have no call being there now, because their brief won't allow them to turn on the Israelis or the Hezbollah. What are they doing?
Sitting ducks, really, aren't they?
They can't even go out and do road patrols.
Yeah, Hezbollah doesn't care if an Irish peacekeeper happens to be in the wrong place.
Well, it was, just for clarity, it was the IDF that fired on them, not Hezbollah.
Yeah, but that's, you know, I mean...
Yeah, I think Israel don't care who the Irish soldiers
are. They don't care. They don't care either, you know, if they're trying to take out Hezbollah. And it means that there's a couple of Irish peacekeepers.
All right, Jimmy, come in there.
No, I was just like, Israel doesn't care many people they kill. Like, you know, they've already killed, was it 45,000 people in Gaza? You know, they're probably intent on killing another 45,000 people now in southern Lebanon if they get away with it. Like, you know, but I think it's...
I think that's a bit...
It's a bigger issue. Well, they've started as they mean to go on. I think, like, you know, they're bombing the place
everywhere. Well, I think their whole approach was wrong, man. They should have...
I think the bigger issue is, you know, it's troops in Finnair camping. And I know some of the troops, because I was chatting to a fella last week and he was telling me he's due to go to Lebanon, like, you know, and he's not looking
when
forward
to it. When is he due to go? Did he give you a date, Jimmy?
I can't remember. He did say it's not far away.
Right.
He did give me the date, but I just can't remember.
No. So in other words, it wasn't middle of next year.
It's in the next. So
are you of the view then that they shouldn't be sent?
Well, I don't think there's much point in them being there. Like, you know, if they're not allowed to keep the peace, you know, if they're going to be bunkered down and they're in danger.
Absolutely. You know, I think
Israel want rid of them as well because. Israel don't want any sight on what's going on there. Like,
I'm just concerned of the Israeli attitude to these peacekeepers because, as I say, some of the commentary directed towards them was really, I felt, was really quite pointed. And the language, we'll do our best to avoid any attacks or injury, which is what they said about civilians in Gaza, for an example.
Yeah, well, they don't care. You know, they could say they killed 46 or 45,000 people in Gaza and they're going to clear their way through Lebanon now. Like, you know,
you'll find that Hamas will hide behind just the way they hid in hospitals. You know, they'll hide behind peace soon.
They just blew up the hospitals. You know, there's no point to hide behind hospitals.
I'm not being pro or anti anything, Peter. But it was the Israelis that encircled the peacekeepers' positions, and some saw that as being using them as human shields. I'm not saying that was the case, but it wasn't Hezbollah or Hamas that did that. It was actually the IDF.
Well, it was Hamas though that started on October the 7th, you know.
But it started long before October the 7th. Like, you know, this has been going on for years. You were saying to the people in Gaza were prisoners in Gaza for years. You know, you can't treat people like that there and expect
well, Hamas was the one though that Hamas was the one that scuppered the Oslo Peace Accord by setting off all the suicide bombs. In
Peter,
Jerusalem,
I get the feeling that your position is almost like that of America in that. You support Israel in defending itself and responding proportionately, but you believe that their response has been disproportionate. Is that
massively disproportionate? Yeah, massively disproportionate and wrong. And you know, I mean, I it's absolutely tragic that so many people, innocent people, have died. I mean, if I was Netanyahu after October the 7th, I would have published the list of the 2,000 leaders of Hamas and Hezbollah, and said, you know, these people, by the way, will not be around in 24 months' time. And I would strongly advise you don't go anywhere near your children. If your children are near you, when we take you out, your children will go as well. And it would be a very targeted, specific response to it.
Paddy, you
know? You
don't seem to be in alignment there.
You see, we're getting into the realms now about right or wrong. And you see, we can heap right on both sides and we can heap wrong on both sides. And I suppose the first casualty in any war is the truth. And who knows what the truth is. I mean, Peter is right and Jimmy is right. And sometime, somewhere, this will come to an end. And there will probably be a lot of people killed in the way. Whatever about the rights or wrongs of it, I suppose that Israel feel under siege at the moment at a 360-degree level. Literally every one of their borders, apart from Egypt, is a hostile enemy to them. But it's unfortunate now that we're in the midst of a power vacuum in America because America are one of the countries that are arming Israel to the teeth. And there's going to be nothing done in America now this side of the inauguration of the new president in the 6th or 7th of January or whatever it is. Because neither Donald Trump nor Kamala Harris, Joe Biden's going to do nothing now because he's just running down the clock. He's just waving goodbye to everybody. And the two candidates don't want to do anything that would implode their campaigns or whatever. So whatever Israel can do now over the next 12 or 10 or 12 weeks, they're going to do it because they're off the leash now and they can do it. And America is arming them to do it. But of course, Iran then is piling arms into the other side and the whole thing is escalating out of control. And I suppose the whole thing for us, though, is the thing doesn't get bent out of shape altogether because Israel has given America and the world fair warning now that they're going to do something spectacular in Iran. And if they do that, it's reasonable to expect that they're going to get some kind of retaliation. So that could, we're talking at the moment now about the Irish peacekeeping force in southern Lebanon, but this could get bent out of shape very, very quickly and escalate into a completely...
And I think that's why an early decision as it relates particularly to our Donegal-based troops would be really important. Okay, very interesting stuff as always. Just a couple of comments from listeners. Peacekeeper being fired on the heads of state speaks up, but Israel killed innocent people. Not a word. Time the government in this world to get very real. Life matters cannot be selective. I think Simon Harris has been... quite vocal in terms of trying to limit or reduce or eliminate the civilian deaths. Has anyone looked at the number of passengers that British Airways brings through Dublin on the way to the US to avail of our customs arrangements? It's the main reason they bought Aer Lingus. We're a stopover point both ways, with many of these passengers not staying in Ireland. Are they counted, Paddy? Peter, sorry, you referenced something about in transit, all included. I didn't understand that phrase.
They're not included. They are included, yeah.
That's, oh, they are included, the okay.
They are included and they shouldn't be included.
I get you.
That's 2 million sort of that don't leave the airport. You said that the whole... One of the reasons for the cap, you know, was because of the traffic, not just the noise, you know, for the local people, of course, and that's very important, but also, you know, the traffic and the transportation sort of, capabilities of the airport to get people in and out of Dublin and everything else, you know. So,
yep, okay.
It shouldn't be included if you don't leave the airport.
Yeah, of course. Another caller says, like other major cities, why not open a second airport? Okay, more from our guests after these. Kapoor, troops at home, please tell Micheál Martin to cop on, sending Irish troops out to be killed. He should have blood on his hands if any of our troops are killed. Another platoon is due to go to Lebanon next week, including members from Donegal. Surely they won't be sent now. Yep, that's what we've been talking about, indeed. Sinn Féin set to face further questions over the level of knowledge within the party about references given by two former senior officials to an ex-colleague who has been convicted of child sex offences. Michael McMonagall, 42, from Limewood Street in Derry, last month pleaded guilty to two charges of attempting to incite a child to engage in sexual activity and 12 counts of attempted sexual communications with a child on dates in 20 and 21. He was suspended from his press office job with Sinn Féin after he was arrested in August 2021. In September 2022, that's 13 months later, he was appointed to the role of communications manager with the British Heart Foundation charity in Belfast. Now, the question is, Jimmy, and I'll put it to you first, is the level of scrutiny of this story justified, or has a very important and sensitive issue become something of a political football? Mary Lou McDonald says, yes, she can bring stuff up, you know, skeletons in the closet of other parties in this regard for going down that route. But do you believe that it's right that Sinn Féin is facing this scrutiny, or is it a bit OTT given the subject matter?
Well, I think the members of Sinn Féin, in fairness, you need to do everything you can to look after, to make sure children are protected. And the members of Sinn Féin who give the references were sacked or whatever, and that's right enough, you know. But I don't know, maybe Michelle O'Neill has some questions answered. She was seen in the same building as him. She says she didn't know he was there. I don't know, maybe she has some questions to answer. But it's clear that Fine Gael especially are using it as a political football, like, you know. I was seen during the week, Jennifer Karen McNeillis, asking the Cian Corlett to set time aside, you know, for statements. And we had Hildegard Naughton, who's actually the chief, Fine Gael chief whip, and she was asking for time put aside. But she knows well that, you know, she was just making a statement, really, because she knows well if she wants time put aside for it, then she can do, as a Fine Gael chief whip, she just has to meet the other chief whips and make that decision. You know, she's in charge of putting the schedule together. And, like, you know, so it is blatant, you know, it's political bluffery, really, you know, trying to, you know, get people to look the other way. You know, there's a lot of other things that the government should be looking into, like the Children's Hospital fiasco and the...
And we'll talk about that, but I mean, if people are... Like, I can't imagine any scenario where, firstly, I'd give anyone who I thought was a lawbreaker a reference or whatever it might be. But, you know, this person was at that time accused of some very, very serious crimes. The two people you mentioned have been sacked or left the party, but this is after it became public. is it not worth scrutinising to ensure, you know, what kind of governance is in there to ensure that this doesn't go under the radar if it's not, you know, if it doesn't come to the public's attention?
Of course, it should be. Like, you know, of course, if there's questions, answer. But, like, I just don't know what questions that Mary Lou McDonald, you know, what she would know about it. You know, the Sinn Féin
have questions would be, how did they find out that he was doing this stuff? When did they find out that he was doing it? What did they do when they found out? You know, I mean, this is just an absolute disgrace that nobody's asking those three questions: how, when, and what did they do when they found out that this paedophile, you know, and
well, he was well. We kind of have a we have a timeline. He was arrested in August 2021. He was suspended from the board.
We know that's when he was arrested. But when did they find out? Did they find out before he was arrested, Greg? That's the question you'd want to, you know, dig deep into, because I don't think you think that the first time they found out was when he was arrested.
But listen, we'll have opportunities to put those questions to Paddy.
Well, is this? I suppose your question at the outset, Greg, was: is this being treated as a political football, or is it being treated as a serious social issue? Sam McBride, the political editor of the Belfast Telegraph, wrote a very good article on this last week, and he talked about that very same thing, about, you know, was it getting serious consideration, or was it, you know, people scoring political points on it? And he made reference to Arlene Foster, the former First Minister and Economic Minister and leader of the DUP in Northern Ireland. She's advertising herself now as an after-dinner speaker, charging £2,500 a go and £10,000 for advice on a green energy saving, of all things, even though she was the Minister for the Cash for Ash fiasco. And apparently Sinn Féin were having great crack with this stuff, and they were poking the whole thing with the story with the stick. And the response back from the DUP was, well, sure, how much is Gerry Adams charging for an after-dinner speech? And the whole thing degenerated into farce, all this kind of table tennis over and back. Recently then, the stuff in Northern Ireland, it started to bubble out then about politicians across the political spectrum here in the South, that they were giving... It turns out that they were given references to convicted rapists. In fact, it's interesting that Jimmy mentioned there about the Cann Corla. Well, Sean O'Farrell, the Fianna Fáil TD, who's the Cann Corla, he was actually in the frame here. He gave a reference to a guy who was actually convicted of child rape in court. Gleeson Myson McMonagall hadn't been charged at that particular time. But that's neither here nor there. So there's no point or no value in this table tennis match going over and back. This is a very serious issue. We are only 2 or 3 weeks ago since there was a report issued about physical and sexual abuse in schools in Ireland, going back whatever period of time. And there was something like 2,900 reports. And Sinn Féin have not dealt well with this, because I have sympathy for Mary Lou McDonald and Michelle O'Neill about the fact that the thing arose in the first place, because I accept the fact that they said that they had no knowledge of their two press officers giving a reference to this guy. Why they thought that was a good idea is completely beyond me. But anyway, they've done that.
But did they say they had no knowledge of this guy's behaviour patterns, like, or did they have no knowledge that the references were given?
Well, let's talk about
an important distinction there.
I don't know that, and that's sort
an important distinction there.
What really caused this to get...
Can I just say, by the way, Peter's raising good questions, as are you. Mary Lou McDonald, I believe, is on this show next week, and I'm going to have an opportunity to put some of these questions to her as part of a broader interview. So we're not throwing questions out there and leaving them hanging. I will try and get answers to what are...
No, that's fair enough. But I'm just going to make the point here that, and this is for every political party, but what happened to Sinn Féin have a governance issue now, and they have a back office management issue here. Because if we're talking about a code of practice and the values, not about their political philosophy or their manifesto or so on and so forth, but it's how they do their business. Because what happened, but they compounded the problem by the way that they reacted to it. I mean, if you listen to or looked at an interview between Enda McClafferty of the BBC and Conor Murphy, I mean, Conor Murphy was so cross and so petulant about the whole thing, more or less saying, why are you asking me about this? And
Can I say one thing?
I am involved in two, a director of two individual charities, and the fact that the party would try and Sinn Féin would try and dish the dirt on the British Heart Foundation, I know nothing about them, but they're also a registered charity, and trying to put the focus on them, that there was a governance issue in their part, I think that was completely reprehensible.
Okay.
Now,
I'll bring you in a second, Peter.
Every political party, though, have an obligation to get their back office stuff in relation to this. Mm.
And I just want to say one thing as well before Peter comes in here. The government, this government, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Greens, on this programme and many other programmes, and quite rightly so, get a great deal of scrutiny. They are the decision makers and what have you. And it is only fair, and if you purport to be fair, it is only fair that all political parties and those who are elected and of no party get the same level of scrutiny. I think sometimes people can be quite defensive. But you have to ask the question. You said that Sinn Féin haven't handled this very well. It seems to be a pattern of in different issues of not getting the communication right on certain issues. Peter, did you want to come in there on that?
Yes, no. And the bigger issue, you know, is with child perverts, you know, people who abuse children, you know, paedophiles. You know, I'm afraid I can't see that they're treatable. You know, other than chemical castration. You know, I mean, they don't. You don't send them to prison and hope that they get rehabilitated and come out of prison. You know, no longer. Dangerous to children. So, you know, I think there should be a
That's a wider point, okay. Jimmy, just on the specifics, I know I started it with you just before our last break. Is there anything else you want to add?
Yeah, like, listen, you have to do everything you can to protect children, and anybody's found doing anything, whether they're perpetrators or whether they're in some way, adding to the situation by not, you know, by giving reference to people who are in these situations, you know, then people need to be called out, like, you know, right yeah. away, like, you know.
And listen, the giving references or character references to courts and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of people that have done that for various different crimes. It's just, I think.
Just make one point.
Of course, you can, Paddy. Yeah.
We go an ad break there, and that is about that. It's important to point out that. Exploitation of children and sex abuse of children is not a historical issue. It is a today issue. Mm-hmm. And I think that Sinn Féin and probably all the political parties need to give their back office staff or their permanent staff a review on children first legislation and safeguarding and all that, because everything that Sinn Féin have done in relation to this has been completely contrary to all that.
Okay, that's the voice there of Paddy Rooney, PRO of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. We're also hearing from Councillor Jimmy Brogan and Peter Casey, Chair of Claddagh Resources. More from our guests after these. A caller says, if it is a serious issue, then the speaker should be brought in to the frame as well. He's not above the law. Another, all the political parties should invite in the ISPCC and allow them to do an audit on how they're complying with safeguarding issues. Not a terrible idea, and I think it would reassure the public. Please refer to actions by Israel and Hamas and Hezbollah to what they are. Murder. Killed does not give the reality of what is happening or the human feelings of why this state oppression of many, many years must be stopped. Last night, France played Israel in the Nations League. I wonder if we were in the same group as Israel, would we have played them? I'm sure we would have. I don't know if there was any protests in France. I think Italy is in that group too. It is worth understanding that there's various levels of support for Israel within this country, but also across the continent and across the world. Right, okay, we're in the company of Peter Casey, Jimmy Brogan, Paddy Rooney. I just want to ask you guys, can the public be reassured that whoever is in the next government will spend public money responsibly? There have been a number of high-profile spending controversies of late. The bike shed, the security hut, the children's hospital. I know in this show that many feel even the money we spend on areas such as housing, health and supporting people with disabilities and children is not having the impact it should have. There are those that feel this leads to voting apathy too. Can anything be done to reassure the public, Peter Casey?
I think if every time the government changes, the head of the civil servant, each department, should have to reapply for his job or her job and say, this is what I've done. Here's what I'm going to, you know, and give a reason why they should keep their job.
Am I correct in saying in Britain, the Prime Minister, the new Prime Minister can change the head of the civil service, and we don't have that here? I believe that's the case.
And it's interesting, you know, in America, Trump is, you know, talking about bringing in Elon Musk to do a separate department for cost cutting, you know. Not sure how that's going to work out. But I mean, I think it would be a great idea to have the civil servants have to pitch for their job, explain, look, here's what I did in my last, you know, term as the leader of the department. And then, look, let them go with love if they fail the interview. You know, give them a nice golden handshake and a tax-free golden parachute or whatever to go and leave. But it's shaking up the civil service like that, I believe, would keep them on their toes, and they have to justify what they've done to maintain their position. And I think that would be a good starting point.
At least maybe the public might feel that that there is change in responsibility. Jimmy Brogan.
I don't know about having to reapply for their job, but there definitely needs to be some accountability in the civil service. Like it doesn't matter how much money you waste, you know. It doesn't, like, you just get away with it. Like, you know, just people just are told to look the other way, you know. But at the end of the day, it's up to the government to make sure that the civil service are the ultimate watchdog. Mm. You know, we have ministers who are, you know, who are supposed to be in charge of these, and they should be looking at it. Now, they can't micromanage everything, I know that, but on big projects, they should be answerable, you know, and that's the problem with the civil service. Nobody's answerable at the end of the day. It doesn't really matter.
When you got a coalition government, you know, and you've got to say something.
It doesn't matter if you have a coalition. We had governments for years and years, and nothing was ever any different. Like, you know,
say I'm the minister working for, you know.
I think the bigger the coalitions, the better.
Like, okay, you know, but before I bring Paddy in here, Jimmy, you know, like, just to your point about accountability, we've got this massive overspend on the children's hospital. And it's in this country, it's like the instead of being over there taking responsibility, the health minister's over here beside us saying, this is absolutely crazy, this can't be allowed to happen, right? And then with the bike shed and all that kind of stuff, the public don't want anyone hung, drawn and quartered, don't get me wrong, but this all happens as a big furore, and then no one is ultimately responsible. There is not an individual. In this organisation I'm in here now, it's a small organisation, everyone knows what they're responsible for and is culpable and responsible and could face sanction for it. But anything can seemingly happen in health, in the OPW, and there's no one responsible. That's what pees the public off.
That's the problem. Like, in every organisation, somebody has to be responsible for the decisions that are made. And, you know, it has to go to the top, and it keeps going to the top until the top person, if the top person is responsible for that decision, then the top person has to go, you know.
Paddy,
that's what I'm saying. The top person has to reapply for his job. And if he doesn't do, if he doesn't, sort of,
well, you need some job security as well. But
like, I think the unions would enjoy taking that one on. Paddy Rooney, come in here now, please, because we're running out of time.
I think Deputy Thomas Pringle was on your program a couple of weeks ago, and you were having a conversation with him, Greg, about this. And I suppose that he was expressing a sense of overwhelmment that all political or politicians get, because remember, when politicians are elected to either the Senate or the Dáil or whatever, they're coming in there new, but the civil service are there permanently. The political system is a transient thing, and the civil service, particularly the senior civil service, are there all the time. I mean, if you go back to a book, I think that was written by, was it Richard Chambers of Virgin Media, about the COVID management or whatever, and there was generally four big dogs in the room, four big strong personalities. Tony Houlihan was one, the chief medical officer, who was on TV every evening, and he came across as a very strong individual. And there was Paul Reid, the chief executive of the HSE, and there was Stephen Donnelly, the Minister of Health. But it was very, very clear that the big dog in the room was Robert Watt, the General Secretary of the Department of Health, that whenever there was a peeing contest, he won all of the time. We have all these institutions that have been put in place, like the Department of Public Expenditure that was put in place in 2011, that was to decide, they were to override the Department of Finance in relation to what was spent and how it was spent. And we have the Office of Public Works, who's supposed to carry out the work diligently on behalf of the government. And we have the Comptroller and Auditor General. I mean, their most recent report is about the Gardaí, about how they are costing major sporting events and rock concerts and so on and so forth. And it turns out that they're undervaluing they're undercosting their own involvement, and also the fact that they're not even collecting the money. Secondly, that concert promoters aren't even paying them for this. I mean, I have a vision in my head here, and Peter, you're going to enjoy this. I have a vision in my head of general secretaries in government departments sitting back in their office, leaning back with their arms behind their head and their feet up on the desk, laughing at some of the exchanges that take place in Dáil Éireann, and particularly opposition TDs who are trying to hold government ministers to account. Because Stephen Donnelly is about eight pairs of arms away from the construction that's taking place in the hospital in Dublin. I mean, that would be akin to Stephen Donnelly, the Minister of Health, coming to Letterkenny University Hospital and calling down one of the surgeons, Michael Sugar, and asking him about a cholecystectomy he'd done last week. That's never, ever going to happen. Yeah. And Stephen Donnelly doesn't have the wherewithal or the time or the expertise to do that. There is a small video on YouTube, and I would encourage people to watch it. It's called That Problem. And it is Mark McSharry, TD, and Jim O'Callaghan, TD, interviewing members of the senior executive within the Office of Public Works in one of the IRAC subcommittees. And it makes choice viewing. It is actually semi-embarrassing the way that the senior officials don't know, didn't happen, should have happened, all of this kind of stuff.
All right, well maybe at some point...
Mark McSharry asked the General Secretary in the Office of Public Works, I mean, why is people not named here? And he talked about the dignity and respect. It was about protecting the dignity and respect of senior civil servants. And Mark McSharry said, what about the dignity and respect of the taxpayer?
Okay, well, maybe we'll play that out at some point. Listen, Paddy Rooney, I wish we had another hour. Thank you very much. Always enjoy listening to you. Take care of yourself. Thank you so very much indeed for joining us. Jimmy, hopefully you'll come back on. I enjoyed listening to you. Thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, no, anytime. Give me a shout anytime.
Councillor Jimmy Brogan, fair play to you. And Peter Casey, last but not least, have a great weekend. God bless you. Thanks very much indeed. Okay. Right, that was our Friday panel. We'll be back with much more on the 9 till noon show. But first, we'll take a break to bring you the news and the obituary notices.